Hello, my name's Dave Emery, and this is side two of For the Record program number 386, titled All Round the World, an update on September 11th and related activities. This is being recorded on November 10th of 2002. Before I get to the substance of the second side of the broadcast, note that courtesy of sister station WFMU-FM in Jersey City, New Jersey, the entire For the Record series is now available online on Real Audio. More recent programs streaming at WFMU.org/Dave Emery, one word, DAVEEMORY. Older broadcasts available for download only at a longer URL linked to both the WFMU.org Dave Emery website and to the Real Audio equipped Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. Note that within a week or so of the airing of this broadcast, the latter, the spitfirelist.com For the Record section, will have a detailed, annotated, article-length description of the program with text excerpts within a week or so of the airing of For the Record 386. Now, back to the substance of the broadcast and more about the related websites later. On the conclusion of side one of this broadcast, we were talking about the Alpaca Amelia, and specifically we were examining a report filed by Lucy Commissar to MSNBC, which lent substance, to an allegation that was first presented and for the record in a paper, a summary report by Kevin Coogan, the author of Dreamer of the Day, about a book that was published in Switzerland in the German language. That book is Schmutzige Geschäfte und Heiliger Krieg, Al-Qaeda on Europa, Dirty Business and Holy War, Al-Qaeda in Europe, co-authored by Johannes and Germana von Donagny. In that book, and in Kevin Coogan's summary report on SAME that we looked at in For the Record 377, 378, and 381, there was an account by a Sekseka Habib Wadani of a deal done for surplus former Red Army weaponry that was obtained and allegedly brokered in part by Ahmed Huber of the Alpaca Amelia, this intended for Al-Qaeda. Ahmed Huber, nay Alfred Huber, or Huber, excuse me, was a protege of Johann von Leers, later Omar Amin von Leers, who was in charge of anti-Semitic propaganda for Goebbels' propaganda ministry in the Third Reich, and later functioned in an analogous fashion for the Egyptian government under Nasser. We've done many programs dealing with Al-Qaeda, Al-Taqwa, and Ahmed Huber. Those are not only available from Spitfire on tape or CD, they are available online from WFMU, and there are long, detailed descriptions of all of those programs online on the Spitfire website. Now, Sekseka Habib Wadani was in Milan and informed Italian authorities and possibly American authorities well about this particular weapons deal that was accomplished prior to 2000. We're going to resume with this article. Again, this was titled by MSNBC, Police Spoke to U.S. Terror Suspect. MSNBC exclusive document shows Tunisian with alleged Al-Qaeda links gave information to Italians 2 years ago, and this lends substance to the charge presented in the von Donagny book and first reported here in the Kevin Coogan summary report of SAME. Skipping down, on August 29th of this year, the U.S. Treasury Department announced it was adding Wadani to its list of top suspected terrorists, noting Italy's charges against him for involvement with the Algerian-based Salafist group for Call and Combat, which operates in North Africa, Spain, and Italy, and, quote, has supported Al-Qaeda activities, unquote. The Treasury Department said Wadani was indicted by the Italians for trafficking in arms, explosives, chemical weapons, identity papers, receiving stolen goods, and aiding illegal immigration. Judge Luca Pistorelli in Milan told MSNBC.com that Wadani is still at large, quote, we suppose he's in France, or maybe he went back to Tunisia, unquote. It was not immediately clear whether Italian officials acted on the weapon smuggling information Wadani provided, or whether U.S. investigators had been notified by their Italian counterparts of the encounter with the Tunisian suspect. When contacted by MSNBC.com, a CIA spokesman said the agency, quote, respectfully declines to comment, unquote. At the Treasury Department, Deputy Assistant Secretary for Public Affairs Rob Nichols said, quote, I checked with our war room. I can't answer your questions as they contain sensitive or classified information, unquote. And skipping down again of the alleged role of Ahmed Huber in brokering this particular deal. The weapon smuggling in Europe, Wadani claimed, flowed through a maze of companies and cities. Wadani told the Italian police that transactions in Switzerland were handled by HSS, a trading company, unquote, that, quote, belongs to a Pakistani named Haji Ashkaa and to a Tunisian family of Zurich, Ahmed and Shoyab Sharifi. The latter are intimate friends of the head of the Muslim community of Zurich, Albert Ahmed Huber, unquote, who facilitated periodic and regular, unquote, shipments of weapons, Wadani said. The United States put Huber on its al-Qaeda terrorist blacklist last November, citing his membership on the board of Al-Taqwa, the Lugano, Switzerland-based bank accused of moving bin Laden's money. And we've dealt with Ahmed Huber in numerous broadcasts, first in For the Record 335, and in many programs since For the Record 343, For the Record 352, 354, and in For the Record 356 and 357, we came to the links of Al-Taqwa to the milieu of the targets that were raided on March 20th of 2002 as a part of Operation Green Quest. And that not only links the milieu of George Bush and Harkin Energy to the milieu of Al-Qaeda and Al-Taqwa, but also links the Republican Party's ethnic outreach organization, and in particular associates of Grover Norquist, to those very same milieu, plural. And in turn, the Al-Taqwa / Nada management milieu goes to the milieu of the Muslim Brotherhood and Youssef Nada himself, allegedly an operative on behalf of Third Reich intelligence during World War II. There was an interesting article about the Saudi connections to the funding of Al-Qaeda, and this talks about the milieu of Al-Taqwa and in turn links it to the Al-Qaeda and to the Islamic charities that have allegedly been involved in funding terrorism. And in turn, when one dollies back, so to speak, with this particular viewpoint, one comes to the world of big, big oil, and in turn that and some of the Saudi links the same go to the milieu of George Bush as well. This article is from the Financial Times of Friday, October 18th of 2002. It's by Edward Alden, headlined "The Money Trail: How a Crackdown on Suspect Charities is Failing to Stem the Flow of Funds to Al-Qaeda." And the article reads in part, "Last March, just days after a visit by Paul O'Neill, U.S. Treasury Secretary, Saudi Arabia blocked the funds of the Somalian and Bosnian branches of Al-Haramain Islamic Foundation. That group, whose headquarters are in Riyadh, was diverting charitable funds, unquote, to terrorist groups linked to Al-Qaeda, authorities alleged. It was the first time since the terrorist attacks of September 11th last year that Saudi Arabia had moved against one of the charities thought to be the biggest source of funding for Al-Qaeda. The crackdown, the two governments declared, would open a new phase in international cooperation to destroy the terrorist financing network," unquote. Last month, however, Saudi newspapers reported that the Al-Haramain Islamic Foundation was expanding its operations in both Bosnia and Somalia and had opened a $530,000 Islamic center in Sarajevo. U.S. officials are aware of the developments and are investigating. The failure to curb Al-Haramain, to date the only charity targeted jointly by the U.S. and Saudi Arabia, is the latest sign that Mr. O'Neill's pledge to shut down the quartermasters of terror, unquote, is foundering. The executive order issued by George W. Bush after September 11th, calling for a worldwide crackdown on funding for terrorist groups, remains a key element of the U.S. war on terrorism. But according to a study by the Council on Foreign Relations released yesterday, a lack of cooperation by Saudi Arabia and some other U.S. allies resulted in little disruption to the web of charities, businesses, and other fundraising ventures that provide Al-Qaeda with huge sums of money. Others have reached similar conclusions. Canadian intelligence agencies estimated in a July 25th report obtained by the National Post newspaper that Saudi-based charities alone are funneling between $1 and $2 million a month to Al-Qaeda. Last month, the United Nations warned that al-Qaeda continues to have access to between $30 and $300 million in funds controlled by otherwise legitimate businesses and charities. While about $112 million in funds linked to al-Qaeda and the Taliban has been frozen, that figure represents only, quote, a small fraction of the funds and resources, unquote, available to those groups, the UN added. Despite earlier claims of success in the financial war on terrorism, the U.S. government itself is also starting to acknowledge publicly the problems it faces. As Alan Larson, Undersecretary of State for Economic Affairs, admitted last week, it is unquestionably true, unquote, that al-Qaeda retains the financial means to carry out strikes damaging to the U.S. Quote, I don't think lack of resources is a major impediment to the operations of terrorist organizations at this stage, he said, skipping down. The results, however, have been disappointing. Washington is increasingly frustrated by the refusal of most European countries to ban fundraising for the political arm of Hamas, the radical Palestinian group, and for Hezbollah, the Iranian-backed militant group. By the way, I would add in the differing attitudes and tactical approaches of Europe and the United States to some of these Islamist groups such as Hamas and Hezbollah, I think one can delineate the structure of not only a rupture, a post-Cold War, and in the opinion of some, at least it passed a point, inevitable rupture between the U.S. and Europe, but I think this also constitutes the fault line of a new geopolitical conflict between the underground Reich, which through corporate Germany controls the European Monetary Union, and the United States. This is a struggle that will play out, no doubt, on the terrorist front, and also to a certain extent, consequently, on the military front. But I think the long-term struggle will be economic. And with the United States now once again running record budget deficits, with net direct foreign investment having dropped from $200.1 billion in the United States in 2000 to just over $2.1 billion in 2001, a 99% drop in 1 year, and with the U.S. running record current accounts deficits, and with the possibility at least of the enormous oil wealth of the Middle East being shifted to European banks, perhaps to banks associated with some of the right-wing elites that emerged largely intact from the end of the Second World War. It'll be interesting to see just what plays out in the next several decades in terms of the United States and Europe. Continuing here, however, returning to the Financial Times of October 18th of 2002. The most glaring shortfalls, however, have been in Saudi Arabia and other Gulf states. Criminal investigations in the U.S. have turned up a series of incriminating links between Saudi-based charities and al-Qaeda. U.S. prosecutors last week charged the Chicago-based head of the Benevolence International Foundation, a large Islamic charity founded in Saudi Arabia, with operating a racketeering enterprise, unquote, that raised money from wealthy Saudi donors interested in supporting al-Qaeda and hid the trail by mingling those funds with legitimate charitable donations. Several other charities with strong Saudi ties are also under scrutiny by U.S. law enforcement officials. And then there's a chart to the right, skipping down. Yet the U.S. and Saudi Arabia have cooperated in only two joint efforts aimed at shutting down suspected terrorist financiers. In the case of al-Haramain, the terrorist designation was limited to the Bosnian and Somalian branches in an effort to avoid embarrassing the Saudis by directly implicating the Riyadh head office of the charity. Since then, evidence uncovered by Russian intelligence and by the U.S. has indicated that funds from al-Haramain have been used to finance combat operations by rebel groups in Chechnya and to support al-Qaeda-linked radicals in Indonesia. In the second case, the two governments in August jointly designated as a terrorist financier Wa'il Hamza Juladin, head of Rabita Trust, a Saudi-based charity already targeted by the U.S. By the way, in For the Record 381, we dealt with al-Haramain's activities in Chechnya, among other places. Skipping down again. Despite patchy international support, U.S. law enforcement officials are pursuing criminal investigations that could, they say, break the current stalemate in the war against terror financing. The biggest obstacle to cooperation from Saudi Arabia and other U.S. allies is that those countries demand proof that their citizens have been funding terrorist groups before taking action. Such proof, U.S. investigators hope, may not be long in coming. In a series of raids in Virginia and Georgia in March, the FBI and Customs seized computers and documents from 19 organizations and 10 internet service providers suspected of supporting foreign terrorist organizations. A range of Saudi-supported charitable groups were targeted, including the Muslim World League, the International Islamic Relief Organization, and the SAR Foundation. All the groups deny involvement in terrorism. In its 2000 tax return, the SAR Foundation reported charitable contributions totaling $1.7 billion, though the foundation has since said that this was a clerical error. Investigators are still sifting through truckloads of seized documents. The picture that's emerging is one of a complex network of charitable groups, front companies, legitimate businesses, and money-moving operations that have numerous ties to suspected terrorists or terrorist-supporting groups. Several of the tentacles reached to Altaqua, the Swiss-based financial group that was shut down last year on U.S. charges that it was financing Hamas and Al-Qaeda. U.S. investigators are trying to decipher how those entities fit together in order to build a strong criminal case. They have layered businesses with all these revenue-generating arms, some legitimate and some charitable, and all filtering funds into these companies, unquote, says one official, referring generally to the U.S. investigation of suspected terrorist financiers. Again quoting, "It's been extremely challenging to sort through all this and connect the suspects both directly to the terrorists and the funds," unquote. By the way, those raids alluded to were the Operation Green Quest March 20th raids. Those, in turn, were spurred by the heroic efforts of John Loftus, whose work we have accessed for a number of years. He filed a lawsuit against Sami Al-Arian, a professor at South Florida University, and ultimately the documentation that precipitated from that lawsuit was the foundation for the Operation Green Quest raids. So for people to think that individuals can't make a difference, individuals can. And by the way, as I speak, on November 10th, we've just had the, quote, Republican sweep, unquote, in the elections. The control of the Senate itself was only decided by 22,000 votes. So the point is that individuals can make a difference, and you should do what you can out there in the audience to become one of those individuals who makes a difference. Now, in that article, talking about the Al-Qaeda / Al-Taqwa / Green Quest milieu, it made reference to a Council on Foreign Relations report, and unfortunately, the conclusions of that report and much of the rest that can be deduced about the Bush administration's cozy relationships with the Al-Qaeda milieu through the oil business, well, those just have not been properly researched. Certainly didn't have much of an effect on the election. San Francisco Chronicle of Thursday, October 17th of 2002 had a short article about the CFR report. This is called Saudi Funding Links, and in the other developments with regard to the war on terror, this article was included. Al-Qaeda's terror network derives most of its financing from charities and individuals in Saudi Arabia, but the kingdom, quote, has turned a blind eye to this problem, according to a new report by experts on terrorist finances. The report faults the United States for failing to confront the Saudis, saying American government officials have asserted that Saudi Arabia is cooperating on stopping terrorist financing, quote, when they know very well all the ways in which it is not, unquote. The report released Wednesday was prepared by a committee sponsored by the Council on Foreign Relations in New York. Although examples of the misuse of Saudi donations by terrorists had been previously reported, the Council study goes further by concluding for the first time that Saudi Arabia is the single largest source of terrorist financing. While the United Nations and others have recently warned that the financial war on terror was sputtering, analysts inside and outside government said the conclusions of the panel carry particular weight because it is bipartisan. The Saudi government had no immediate response to the report, but the report drew a sharp rebuttal from the Bush administration. Rob Nichols, a spokesman for the Treasury Department, said the report was helpful but flawed because it focused too much on the Clinton administration's efforts and did not reflect the, quote, exponential increase in people, agencies, and money dedicated to terrorist financing, unquote, by the Bush administration, unquote. Well, again, the milieu that was targeted by the March 20th Green Quest raids goes right not only to the Bush administration and Al-Taqwa and to the milieu of the Muslim Brotherhood and the Underground Reich, but it also goes to the milieu of the Republican Party and its ethnic outreach organization itself in the past, a repository for Third Reich and World War II Axis alumni. More about efforts to get the Saudis up to speed on the war on terror. San Francisco Chronicle of Friday, October 18th of 2002 contained this Washington Post article by Douglas Farah. Its headline, U.S. moves to freeze assets of wealthy al-Qaeda backers at State Line, Washington, and reads in part, U.S. intelligence has identified about a dozen of al-Qaeda's principal financial backers, most of them wealthy Saudis, and a top financial investigator is headed to Europe to seek a unified front to freeze their assets in hopes of crippling the terror network, senior administration officials said Thursday. Jimmy Gurule, G-U-R-U-L-E, the Treasury Department's Undersecretary for Enforcement, said he will begin a six-day visit to Europe on Sunday to present his counterparts with, quote, specific information on selective, high-impact targets, unquote, so they can, quote, be designated terrorist financiers and have their assets blocked. Skipping down again. Another senior official said the list targets those who have given tens of millions of dollars to Osama bin Laden's terrorist organization through the years by routing the money through charities and legitimate businesses around the world. Skipping down, the list, officials said, goes to the check writers who give the money to al-Qaeda, not just the facilitators and those who have moved the money around. We are finally getting to the source. Now, they said, recent intelligence gathered through interviews with captured al-Qaeda operatives and other methods has given them a clearer picture of where much of al-Qaeda's money comes from. The official said most of the alleged financiers are wealthy Saudi bankers and businessmen. Because the Saudi government has previously proven uncooperative in confronting its prominent citizens about links to terror, the United States has not yet sought its help in the new effort, officials said. And so, again, a Treasury Department official on his way to Europe and apparently also to Saudi Arabia to try to get things up to speed in that regard. Meanwhile, something else that appears to have largely gone unrecognized in the recent election is the very, very curious behavior of the Bush administration, which, as I've said, through the petroleum business and through links to the Underground Reich, is linked to the milieu of al-Qaeda and al-Taqwa and the Muslim Brotherhood, as we've seen in many programs in the past. There is a lawsuit by surviving relatives of victims of the September 11th attacks, which has targeted Saudi finance, and in particular has targeted the assets of members of the Saudi royal family in connection with the September 11th attacks, and the Bush administration may very well be moving to block this particular lawsuit. The Bush, this, by the way, from the New York Times of Friday, October 25th of 2002, article by Philip Sheenan, Dateline, Washington, October 24th, U.S. may ask court to dismiss a $1 trillion suit linking Saudis to al-Qaeda and to September 11th. It reads in part, the Bush administration is closely monitoring a private lawsuit accusing members of the Saudi royal family of ties to al-Qaeda and may move in a federal court here to dismiss or delay the suit, which was brought by relatives of September 11th victims, according to administration officials. Government lawyers, the officials said, are trying to determine whether the case threatens to damage Saudi-American relations, which would give them reason to block the suit. The suit seeks $1 trillion in damages and is being pursued here by nearly 3,000 of the relatives. A State Department official, speaking on condition of anonymity, said he knew of no plans by the United States to take action in court, but he said the issue of the lawsuit has been raised in recent meetings of top American and Saudi officials. Quote, the Saudis have made their concerns known at a senior level. Unquote. Also relatively unrecognized is the Bush administration's behavior with regard to an independent commission to investigate September 11th. USA Today of Thursday, October 24th of 2002 has the following: talks on 9/11 commission may hinge on Bush views. President Bush's aides won't say whether he would veto an independent investigation of the September 11th terror attacks if he doesn't get to pick the chairman or limit the panel's subpoena power. Skipping down. The Bush administration, which initially opposed the commission, now says it favors one but wants the president to pick the person who will head the panel. Congressional backers favor bipartisan co-chairs. The White House also wants to bar the commission from issuing any subpoenas that aren't endorsed by members of both parties. Congressional backers say any five members of the 10-member commission should be able to issue a subpoena. So Bush, ambiguous at best about the independent commission to investigate September 11th. And the last stop on our September 11th world tour, and this is an entirely speculative element, and that concerns some of the circumstances surrounding the altogether curious sniper suspects, John Alad Muhammad and his young protege, John Lee Malvo, both African-Americans. John Alad Muhammad converted to Islam in 1985, the same year that he joined the Army. And I would note that the primary areas of operation of the sniper were in the Maryland and Virginia Beltway around Washington, D.C. Those are the areas where the March 20th Green Quest targets were located. And I would note that his other main area of operation was Bellingham, Washington, which is where the Yaqub Mirza corporate fronts that are at the epicenter of September 11th were located. I would also know that among the organizations, overlapping the March 20th Green Quest targets was the GSISS, the only organization that is empowered to certify chaplains, Muslim chaplains, for the United States Army. We also know that Muslim Brotherhood head and Supreme Guide Saeed Ramadan had a sufficiently vigorous base to operate in the greater Washington area and recruit from among African-American radical Islamists for he successfully recruited at least one assassin from that area. All of which is to say that I have more questions and answers about the sniper, but nobody is asking about the possibility that he might in fact be tied to the milieu of Al-Qaeda and Green Quest. The New York Times of Friday, October 25th of 2002, has an article by Blaine Harden and Tim Golden. Suspects spent year traveling, quote, nearly destitute, unquote. And talking about their activities in Bellingham, Washington, the epicenter of Yaqub Mirza's fronts that overlap Al-Taqwa, we read, skipping down, by early this year, Mr. Malvo and Mr. Muhammad were living together in the Lighthouse Mission, a homeless shelter in Bellingham, Washington. But they did not always seem to belong. I always thought, this guy has no visible means of support, but he's flying to Jamaica, he's flying to D.C., to Louisiana, unquote, said Rory Rublin, a staff member. That's one of the nagging suspicions I had in the back of my head. So again, is it possible that the sniper may have had links to the Green Quest / Muslim Brotherhood milieu in Bellingham, Washington, and the Washington Beltway? To be determined. But again, I would note the Underground Reich has many links going to the white supremacist apartheid regime and through African-American Islamists all around the world, the Philippines, the Middle East, and the operatives are many, but in the end, they are allied with the Underground Reich. WFMU has the program streaming on Real Audio. More recent programs, WFMU.org/Dave Emery, and older programs at a longer URL linked to both that website and to the Spitfire website at www.spitfirelist.com. That website's equipped with Real Audio, and within a week or so of the airing of this program, we'll have a detailed article-length annotated description of For the Record Program 386. This concludes side two of that program, being recorded on November 10th of 2002. My name's Dave Emery. Thanks for listening.